Chapter 8, Lake Lanier, Georgia, December 2011. Reeling in Nick had been a formidable challenge. It took months to lay out a plan, make arrangements, and set in motion a strategy to secure the security guard. Rob smiled at his ingenuity, how fate had played into his hands. Every element was crucial, cogs moving into unison to create the precision of a delicate timepiece. Each day, he fine-tuned details, watched the puzzle pieces fall into place, one by one. He would lead Lacey to the depths of the lake and spiral her into the grasp of death, to hell with collateral damage. Sydney, Georgia, November 1949. The drive from the plant to Looper Speedway took about 10 minutes, not nearly enough time to get into a heated conversation, thank goodness. With no idea of how to tell Bobby that his efforts to thwart the construction of Buford Dam would fail, or that the woman he found unconscious in the woods was a time traveler, I needed every precious moment to brainstorm. Fortunately, our racetrack date appropriated a few additional hours to sift through my options and come up with a feasible solution. Though I really had no interest in seeing a bunch of car enthusiasts strut their stuff to prove who had the most testosterone, the races at Looper turned out to be a pleasant surprise. The drivers took such pride in their cars and hit curves at speeds well beyond the capacity of typical cars of this era. The highlight of the evening was watching the men eat crow when Sarah Christian raced old Max's car and left them in the dust. When she won that race, every one of those guys had their manhood knocked down a notch. The mere notion of a woman winning must have been a travesty. She deflated their chauvinism. Sarah took home the checkered flag that afternoon, a giant leap for women's lib, and much to my surprise, I had a lot of fun. On the drive home, we talked and laughed about the day's events. Sarah really shut down those guys this afternoon. Bobby reached up, adjusted his rearview mirror. She's a real spitfire. Yeah, she totally blew them away, I replied. Totally blew them away. That's an interesting description. I like it. Where in the world? Isn't the evening beautiful? I interrupted, derailing his train of thought. It has been a nice day, he replied. The weather has been unusually warm for weeks. Most years, morning frosts shrivel our garden by mid-October. I sure hope we don't end up paying for this warm streak next year. I had a lovely time, Bobby. Thank you for bringing me to Looper. The night's still young. Sandy has a date with Ridgie Thompson, so she's not making dinner. Will you say we take a spin around the square, then grab a burger and shakes at Millie's? I'd say that sounds delightful. Smiling, I leaned back in the passenger seat and gazed at the crimson colors flooding the sun-drenched horizon. A lone star shone brightly, winking at the dawn of the evening sky. Starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. Wish I may, wish I might. Have the wish I wish tonight. Bobby, if you could have one wish, any wish at all, what would you ask for? I don't know. He parked, hopped over the side of the car, and opened my door before I had a chance to sit up straight. When I was a boy, I'd wish that all the wishes I could ever make would come true. But, in point of fact, sometimes the things I thought I wanted most didn't turn out to be such great ideas after all. He held out his hand to assist me out of the car onto the gravel parking lot. I guess I'd wish that I could make things right for my sister, and for you too, Maddie. He slipped his hand around mine, gently led me toward the path. How about you? What would you wish for? I'd wish for happiness, love, and the ability to make the right decisions. That's an odd wish, he said, putting his arm around my shoulder. Not really. It's not so different from your wish. What if you knew the future? What was best for your sister? But she thought she wanted something far different. Would you wish her to be happy now or later?
A good question.
He scratched the stubby nubs on his chin.
I'd wish the choice that would benefit her life the most.
I looked at him, hoping he'd agree with my analysis.
That's one thing I love about you, Maddie. You look at life differently than anyone I know.
He pulled me closer in an affectionate hug.
We strolled to the pond, then sat on a wooden bench, just in time to see the sun's crimson farewell. Twilight welcomed a burst of starlight to the evening sky, and the full moon reflected off the water, casting a romantic glow that shimmered over an audience of two. "It's so beautiful, Bobby." I rested my head on his strong shoulder. He angled my head to align our eyes, tucked a strand of hair behind my ear. "Yes, beautiful." He stared at me with a hypnotic gaze, while the back of his forefinger grazed my cheek. "Emerald eyes, soft skin, smooth, luscious lips. You're bewitching, Maddie Montgomery." He pulled me closer. "I've never felt like this with anyone before." Running his fingers through my hair, he gently tightened his grip, his breath soft against my cheek. "You're so different from the girls I've known. I burn inside when you're close to me." When he opened his mouth over mine, I melted into his soft, warm kiss. My subconscious echoed a pale warning, a feeble attempt to keep me from getting hurt. But the muffled whispers drowned into a sea of desire. Shoal Creek Baptist Church stood at the crest of the Chattanooga River. Most Sundays, like this one, Bobby and Sandy sat in their family pew at the right front side of the sanctuary. It had been years since I'd attended a traditional church, but the hymn struck a familiar chord somewhere in the dusty corners of my mind. I felt a bit irrelevant, sitting there, while my thoughts drifted back to the enchanting sensual evening Bobby and I had shared the night before. I berated myself for getting sucked into the romance of the moment, succumbing to classic prayer tactics, but I could still feel the embers of desire smoldering deep inside of me. After we got home from church, Sandy disappeared inside the house to get ready for her picnic with Richie, leaving Bobby and me alone for the first time since our romantic encounter.
"You want to go for a walk before we head inside?" Bobby asked.
"Sure." I was a bit nervous about what might happen should we find ourselves alone again. He grabbed my hand, walked toward the sidewalk.
"Say, about yesterday morning, I'm sorry I got so riled up about the dam."
He laced his fingers between mine, squeezed my hand.
"I'm sure we'll get the Corps of Engineers to change the site, but I'd really appreciate any information you may know. The more ammunition I have going into the meeting Friday night, the better chance we'll have of saving Sydney."
"Well, I..." Scrambling for something to say to further put off the inevitable, I could think of nothing.
"I understand your hesitance, Maddie, and I'm not asking you to take sides. But this is the United States. I fought to defend this country, our rights, and freedom."
He stopped walking, grabbed my other hand, his eyes searching mine.
"The Declaration of Independence defends our right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what we're fighting for, and it isn't a trivial pursuit. Our land and homes are at stake. A lot of us have lived in Sydney for generations. Mothers gave birth here, and our ancestors are buried in the cemetery."
"Wait, Bobby, that's it," I jabbered. His soapbox speech shattered. He looked at me completely muddled.
"What are you talking about?"
"Oh, it's nothing. You just reminded me of something. Sorry, please go on." Bobby's voice faded into the background as my own thoughts ruminated on the key to my dilemma. Trivial pursuit. Piper and I had won tons of trivial tournaments in college. No one had a better repertoire of random information than we had. I may not be a history buff, but my mind brimmed with trivial facts and arbitrary data. I simply had to conjure up a match. "Bobby," I interrupted again, "when is the town meeting?"
"It's this Friday evening, November 18th. Why?"
he asked, clearly annoyed that I wasn't taking his explanation seriously. A shiver trickled down my spine when he said November 18th.
"My dad's birthday,"
I whispered, and exactly what I needed, a surefire way to convince Bobby I was undeniably from the future. This Friday, November 18th, 1949, I knew precisely what would happen. Not at the town meeting, of course, but thanks to Daddy and Trivial Pursuit, that date had been etched into my memory. The perfect event, significant, unexpected, and irrefutable evidence to confirm I knew the future.
"Maddie, are you okay?"
Smiling, I reached for his hand. I'm more than okay. I'm fabulous.
Well, I'm not going to argue with that. But where did you go? You drifted off in a daze.
I squeezed his hand and threw out a lame excuse to cover my musing. Sorry, I guess it's been a long day. Glancing around, I noticed we were approaching the elementary school playground.
Hey, let's walk over to the swing set. It's been ages since I sat on a swing.
A bomb was about to drop on Bobby's life, and he might need to sit down when he heard what I had to say.
All right, I could push you if you'd like.
It was a sweet gesture, but hardly what I had in mind. Maybe, but let's sit and talk for a while first. I sat on a swing, began pressing my feet against the ground just enough to glide back and forth. Here goes. I drew in a long breath, then slowly exhaled. I told you yesterday I knew some things about the dam, but I didn't tell you why.
Bobby sat in the swing next to me. It doesn't really matter why. I just need as much information as possible to convince the Army Corps of Engineers that Sydney...
Bobby, this is important. I cut him off. Maybe the most important thing you've ever heard in your life. So please, just listen.
Grabbing the chain on his swing, I held him still.
You said yesterday that you trusted me, right?
Sure I do. But what does that have to do with Sydney?
It has everything to do with the dam project. Letting go of his chain, I pushed the dirt beneath my feet with the toe of my shoe, setting my swing in motion again, then gazed over at the passionate man sitting next to me. My heart broke for him. What he was about to hear would devastate his life, change it forever. What I have to tell you is going to be beyond difficult for you to believe, but I swear it's true, every word of it. So please, promise me, you'll keep an open mind and hear me out. This was harder than I thought. I stopped swinging, clasped my hands, and stared at the ground. How could I explain my trip through time to Bobby without sounding absolutely certifiable? But I had to try.
I promise, Maddie. Please, tell me everything you know. I'll believe you.
Turning, I searched deep into his eyes. You say that now, but... in a few minutes, you may change your mind.
I didn't mean to sound cavalier. I trust you.
He reached over, grabbed my hand.
But trust is a two-way street. Can you believe in me enough to tell me what's troubling you so?
Okay, here goes. You remember when you found me in the middle of the woods and we couldn't find my car anywhere? Bobby nodded. I continued. Well, there was a reason for that. I pulled my hands from his, ran my thumb over my bottom lip, trying desperately to choose the right words. And you've also said many times that I confuse you or say strange things, like we're not communicating very well.
Yes, go on.
Clearly grasping how difficult this was for me, he squeezed my hand with reassurance.
You can tell me anything.
I looked at him with pleading eyes, praying he'd believe me. Last Saturday night, I was visiting my friend Piper at her lake house. We went to a party at the club on the north shore of Lake Lanier.
I remember you talking about a party, but there is no Lake Lanier anywhere around here. You must have traveled a lot further than you thought.
That, Bobby, is the understatement of the century. I closed my eyes, took another deep breath, held it, and then slowly released the air.
Just spit it out, Maddie.
I did travel a long way, but not by car.
Okay, now you're confusing me.
He rested his elbows on his knees, clasped his hands. I know, it doesn't make sense, but it's true. I squeezed my eyes shut, tightly for a moment, softly bit the end of my fingernail. Bobby, when I saw Cole fooling around with that woman at Piper's party, when I flew out into the storm, it was Saturday night.
Right. I found you the next morning. We already talked about all of this.
He reached for my hand again.
What's eating at you, Maddie? Tell me. You can trust me.
I do. This is just so hard to explain. You see, I wrecked my car on Saturday night, but you didn't find me the next morning. You found me 63 years earlier. I bit the corner of my lower lip, looked into Bobby's eyes and added, Piper's party was Saturday night. I paused. May 26, 2012.
What?
He dropped my hand, wrinkled his brow, and glared at me.
Judas Priest, Maddie, this is not the time to joke around.
I wish I was joking. The reason we couldn't find my car is because it wasn't there. Not in 1949, anyway. My car, Piper, and my life is, was, or will be in 2012. When I fell backward, rolled down the ridge into the lake, I somehow passed through a crack in time, or a wormhole, some strange anomaly that brought me here to 1949.
What in the world are you talking about? Do you even hear what you're saying?
He stood, gazed down at me as if I was completely insane. The compassion drained from his face. I know how crazy this sounds. I didn't believe it myself at first. I thought it was some kind of a joke, too. Grabbing the chains of my swing, I pulled myself up. I'm trying to tell you that I can't call Piper or go home. I shoved the seat out of my way, walked a few steps, then leaned on a tetherball pole. I stared at Bobby, waiting for some kind of a reaction. There was none. He simply glared at me. I didn't know what I was expecting, but I figured he'd at least have some kind of physical reaction. Bobby, do you have any idea how hard this is to tell you? I don't know how I got here. I don't know why. I don't know how to get back to 2012. I don't know if going home is even possible. I don't know how to explain any of this. All I know for sure is that I'm here, and I was born in 1984. Finally, I saw his tension drain. He walked toward me. Did he believe me? Was he coming over to console me?
Maddie, come on. You hit your head really hard the other day and were out cold for hours. You're probably still confused. You need to see a doctor.
Absolute denial. He really thinks I'm completely certifiable. You said you trusted me. So believe me when I say I'm not confused. I paused my explanation for a moment to let the news sink in before continuing. I know exactly where I am, where I came from, but more importantly, I know about the damn that will happen to Sydney, because in my world, your future is past history. He placed his hands on his hips.
That's impossible. Surely you don't expect me to believe.
I expect you to keep your promise. I'm telling you the truth, and I can prove it.
Sure you can.
He reached out his hand to me.
But for now, come with me. We'll go back to the house, and you can lie down for a while.
Jerking away, I felt my body stiffen. Stop patronizing me. I can prove that your future is my past. I shot the tetherball out of my way with a burst of temper, but it swirled back around the pole and hit me in the knees.
This should be good. Okay. Exactly how do you intend to prove to me that you flew here from the future, landed 1949, 30-some years before you were born?
First of all, I didn't fly. I fell, or was sucked here, or materialized by some strange anomaly. I don't know. How I arrived is moot. Every muscle in my body tensed. Bobby had to believe me, and how I delivered this news would determine what would happen next for both of us. This coming Friday, November 18th, 1949, I know something that will happen that day, something that I would never know for sure unless the event was written in history.
And just what would that be?
His sarcastic tone would have infuriated me if the circumstances had been different. My fist clenched as I swallowed my anger. The National Baseball League is going to announce its most valuable player. Who do you think will win? He kicked at the dirt, bent over to pick up a small stone.
Probably Stan Musial, Ralph Kiner, or maybe Pee-wee Reese. What difference does that make?
What if I told you none of those guys will win? What if I said Jackie Robinson was going to win the National League? And the American League MVP, I know that winner too. I never thought I'd be thankful for the hours I spent memorizing baseball facts. The date stuck in my mind because of Daddy's birthday. He loved baseball. Memorizing little tidbits of baseball trivia was one more attempt I'd made to win his love. Obviously, that had failed miserably, but at least the information might convince Bobby that I knew the future.
Maddie, it's unlikely Jackie Robinson will win.
He's a great player, but face it, people are prejudiced. He fiddled with the stone in his hand, then inspected it closely. Robinson may deserve to be recognized, but no one expects him to win. Well, believe me when I say that Jackie Robinson will win, and Ted Williams will win the American League. He stared at me in silence with an odd glower. Say something, Bobby. I'm not crazy. I swear I'm not. I promise I'd keep an open mind, he said, but I'm not a chump. Even if you manage to guess the MVPs. It's not a guess. I know how insane this sounds. Believe me, I've been trying to unravel this paradox all week. God, I wanted to tell you, but I was afraid you'd lock me up in some loony bin. Disappointment flushed his face and grew into a contorted frown. I'd never do that. I don't think you're crazy. Just confused. Clenching his left fist around the stone, he ran the fingers on his right hand through his hair. I'm not confused, Bobby. Please, just defer your judgment until Friday. If the events I've cited don't happen, then you can take me to a doctor or walk away, whatever you want. But if I'm right, will you believe me then? Rolling the stone between his fingers again, he paced back and forth in a small rectangle before speaking. What do you think you know about the dam and Sydney? He asked. I know that no matter how hard you try, you can't save your hometown. He shot a fiery glare my way. Why? I walked over to his side, touched his shoulder. Because in my world, Sydney no longer exists. They built that dam and a lake too, a huge lake with 700 miles of shoreline. In the process, they displaced a lot of people and submerged a town. Your town, Bobby. In my world, Sydney lies at the bottom of Lake Sydney Lanier. Lake Sydney Lanier. How appropriate. His eyes exposed the internal wound he must have felt. No! He bellowed, flung the stone from his hand, and slammed the tetherball with his clenched fist, spinning the ball until the rope wrapped completely around the pole. We're going to fight the dam, and you'll lose, Bobby. My emphatic tone melted into empathy. Please, trust me about this. I know it's not what you want to hear, but nothing you do will save Sydney. The lake will swallow this entire area. Pushing the unwinding tetherball aside, he kicked at the dirt again. Why are you saying this? He sneered. Did the Corps of Engineers put you up to it? I let out a long, deep sigh and dropped my chin. You know that's not true. He ambled to the edge of the dirt playground, bent over, picked up a worn baseball half hidden amongst the blades of grass and weeds, and began tossing the sphere upward, then catching it. His glare bore into me. I will save Sydney. They can't just sweep in here and destroy our homes, our lives. Tucking my hair behind my ears, I edged closer to him. If you don't believe what I've told you, wait until Friday. See who wins the MVPs. I wouldn't lie to you, Bobby. I just want to help you. Snapping around, he scowled with the rage of 1,000 betrayals. Help me. He tossed the ball higher, rolled it in his hand. According to you, there's not a damn thing anyone can do. I can't save Sydney, but maybe I can do something to help you and your friends. In my time, I am a lawyer. I know the laws are probably different here, or rather, now. But I might be able to help you and the people who live here negotiate with the Corps of Engineers. Still tossing the ball, he grimaced. You don't get it, do you? This is not about money. It's about our homes, our lives. Our grandfathers built this town with their bare hands, built homes, schools, and stores. This community is our birthright, our heritage. For God's sakes, Maddie, don't you see? We all built our dreams around this town. And now you say they're going to obliterate everything that took generations to build? They want to demolish the entire town as if we were some old, worn-out building. I get that, Bobby. I'm not heartless. God, you have no idea how much I wish Sydney would be spared, that you could change the future. But in 2012, Sydney no longer exists. It's nothing more than a ghost town submerged beneath the lake. I walked across the grass, stood next to him, silently staring into the lush green woods. My thoughts swirled, envisioning a sea of water engulfing the trees, swallowing the land, schools, and churches. It will all disappear, Bobby. The square, shops, homes, and the racetrack, too. That's why Looper sounded so familiar to me. Piper had just told me about Looper resurfacing during a drought.
Muddy. His eyes burned a deep cobalt blue. This is our home. The only home most of us have ever known. They can't do this. I won't let them.
He pulled back and threw the baseball as hard as he could, projecting his rage through the ball. The tiny sphere ricocheted off the telephone pole, shattered a streetlight, and skidded down Main Street. If you did that in my time,
I'd be arrested, he hissed, snapping at me.
No, you'd be skipping that ball like a rock across the lake. My heart broke for him. I wanted to hug him, pull him close, and let him know that everything would be okay. But it wouldn't be okay. I wasn't sure if his life would ever be okay. You can't change history, Bobby, I whispered, taking his hand in mine. He yanked away from me.
I can try, he said, and started back toward the house.
Not if you really want to help your friends. I caught up to him, grabbed his arm trying to comfort him, but he jerked away and continued walking, still glaring at me, his eyes burning with fury.
I can't talk about this anymore. I need time to think.
Picking up his pace, he kicked at everything in his path. Bobby, please, let me help you. I jogged, trying to keep up with his pace. Where are you going? He shrugged, said nothing. We walked back to the house in separate silence like strangers. Nausea rolled through my stomach. My heart ached. I couldn't bear to see him like that. Broken, defeated. I wasn't sure if he believed me or hated me for playing such a cruel joke on him. Either way, he would see the truth in time. Jackie Robinson would be named National League MVP. Ted Williams would win the American League. And Bobby's beloved Sydney would sink into the bowels of Lake Lanier.